Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, and online at philhendryshow.com, which is our online home for our show, and we have live streaming video of our show each and every night. I was just commiserating and communicating via our video cast with some of our subscribers, one of whom is on pain medication, and so we are the one glowing light at the end of his day as he is suffering through some kind of problem, or maybe he's just taking the pain medication, you know.
Yeah, maybe he scored it.
Yeah, I scored it like from a pharmacist that ain't.
No, I understand it. Just don't go any further with that, all right? And also, just everybody. So if you want to join us with a backstage pass, you can do that at philhendryshow.com. Tomorrow we have, tomorrow or today, depending upon where you're hearing the show, we have episode 16 of the free Phil Hendry podcast. If you'd like to listen to our free podcast and get an idea as to what we do offer on our website and on our show, you can go to our podcast banner on our homepage there at philhendryshow.com. There's been a lot of news, but there's also news of a different kind. It's more of the human interest news. It is the kind of news that is, it's not the big headline political news. It may not be the big foreign affairs news, but it is the news of, well, it's the news of you and I. It's the news of families. It's the what we call lifestyle stuff. And locally in the Los Angeles area here, something that happens across the country, I'm sure, every day, every day. We had a pretty big story of a man in a supermarket disciplining his child by way of corporal punishment. That is, by way of physically, you know, striking the child. And there was another customer who attempted to intercede, and there was a problem. And we're going to talk with the gentleman here who was the father of that child. I don't believe that he was arrested, but there was a enough of a altercation or disruption there in the store where I think both men had to talk to police. And you eventually wrote a letter to the Los Angeles Times, Raj, and you wrote one to our show, Mr. Raj Fineen joining us. And first of all, I need to ask you where you live, sir.
I live in Sherman Oaks. We have a business in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay, and where were you?
I was at this grocery on Buena Park, Fraser Food, and we had been in this because I took my family to the Knott's Berry Farm.
So you were in Knott's Berry Farm?
Yes, and my wife wanted to stop and pick up some groceries at the store that we saw, you know, because they had some things that most of the stores don't have. And at the time, we went...
First, I want to ask you, sir, where are you from originally?
I'm from Egypt.
You're Egyptian?
Yes, sir.
So are you you're not a citizen?
No, sir. I'm...
You have a work visa and a green card?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So this... my son was born in the United States. And of course, I want my son to have the benefit of this great country, you know. He was in the store... And he's with me, in fact, he's with me right now.
Yeah, you know, your son's name is Todd, and he's in the room with you?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So I'm telling the people, I spoke to my son Arabic. And what this was my son was in the store with me. My son is born in this country, and I want my son to be, you know... an American. But we also teach my son to speak Arabic, and it's mostly this is the way we communicate as a family. When my son goes to school, and if he's speaking to his friend, of course, you know, he's going to use English. But in the story, he was and when he speaks to me, he speaks to his mother. We require him to speak Arabic.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it might have been on this day, because of Knott's Berry Farm, because it had been one of these days where you indulge your children. We had indulged our son, that he spoke English to me. And I corrected him, and he was being feisty, you know.
All right, so when did you actually strike your son?
I said to him, told you... Told you I'm talking to the man of Yes, and I said that Todd, please speak to Daddy in Arabic. And he refused. He was speaking English. Now, I'm not saying that I don't want my son to speak English. I think my son should speak English. But the family in our family, we want them to speak Arabic. And
you were in a store, though. This was in a... it doesn't matter where you are?
No, no. If he's speaking to an American, he's speaking English. But if he speaks to me, he speaks Arabic. If he speaks to his mother, he speaks Arabic. If he speaks to his grandparents who have come and are living here now. And he refused to do this. And that's when I gave him, which is a very, it's a piece of corporal, what we call a corporal punishment. Is that correct, Phil?
Yeah, corporal punishment is when you physically discipline a child.
Yes, this was a very backhand is something we use in our country, in our culture. The mother's, we call it, I'm trying to translate into English, it's called the mother's hand.
The mother's hand, what is that?
That's a backhand across the face. And I did this to him a number of times because I wanted him to know, to say, I'm sorry, Papa, and I will do what you want me to say. But Todd is here, and how many times did I have to give you? Okay.
Now, I notice he's speaking Arabic there.
Yes.
And you spoke English to him.
Well, I did, but most of the... I can say it in Arabic. I spoke English for the benefit of you and your listeners.
Oh, okay. So what did he say?
He said, what did Todd, get up to that. I struck you, yes, I struck him 6 times, and you would not tell Daddy. Why? He says he was being a bad boy.
So you hit your son across the face 6 times.
It was this backhand, which is not the same. And you have to understand that the way this backhand is applied is very moderate, as the noise is injurious. But this man came up to me, and this store manager, and says, I don't want you to do that. And I said to him, are you speaking to me as the store manager, or are you speaking to me as a man? He said, I'm speaking to you as both. And I thought this man is making a big mistake, you know, because this man is interrupting me in the middle of me talking to my own son, you know. And
yeah, but it was in his store.
It doesn't matter if it's in his store. I was talking to my son. I will speak to my son in my way, you know. So
what wound up happening?
Well, I said to him, you're saying everything you're saying to me, you're saying wrong. You're not saying the right things to me. He said to me, I don't care. You're not to strike this boy in the store. And I said to him in so many words, you know, I don't want to repeat.
Okay, so it got kind of salty.
Excuse me.
It got kind of angry.
Yes, very much angry, and as he was speaking to me, I have my son here to my left, and I was backhanding my son even as I'm speaking to him. I said to him, "You can't stop me from to speak to my son. You can't stop me from to speak to my son." And he tried to restrain my hand.
Now, let me ask you something here, Raj, before we go any further. Can you understand a parent, a man, or any... Can't you understand that when they see a man like yourself backhanding a little boy's face, can't you understand why they would intercede?
Yes, absolutely, yes, I can, because I know this is what Americans do. I know this is America. And I know that the Americans, this is what they do. But, Phil, I ask you to consider this idea that Americans have lost control, you know, of their children because they won't do this, you know. And now here is this American is going to tell me how to discipline my son. And I said to him, look at your children, look at your children. And he said, I don't care, you know. And
well, so what does that mean? You're saying that you're...
What I'm saying is I don't think Americans... I understand that this man is going to say what he said to me. I understand what this man was going to say. But I don't... But I, 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 I don't hear, if you want to say, I don't take you serious, you know. Because look at the American and the situation with their own children, you know.
So you believe that our kids are so out of control they could use some of this?
I am not going to give advice.
Because I hear what you're I don't agree with you. I don't believe that corporal punishment is the way. But you do. You're saying that Americans, had we apply more corporal punishment to kids, we wouldn't have the problems we have with kids. I think we've got some pretty damn good kids in this country. You know?
Well, there's no doubt that you've got the good kid, but you have a gang, you know, this gang's is...
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that.
I know, but, you know, I don't want to... I'm not going to do a, you know, big debate. You know, it's just that here's my son. And I said to this man, you don't do that. Don't get in between me and my son. You know, and I emphasized, I said to him, you will not stop because this is my son. I am his father, you know. And I continued as I spoke to this man. I said, you can't. But I continued to make a point of to backhand my son across the face. And
all right, so the mother's hand is some cultural thing. You're backhanding your son across the face because he refused to speak Arabic. All of those things you have to understand here, Raj, all of those are real hot buttons with Americans, you know.
What does that mean, a hot button?
Well, first of all, Americans, you know, we're really big on English. And secondly...
Oh, no, I know these...
Hold on. And secondly, then... You're smacking this kid because he won't speak Arabic. He wants to speak English. So you're going to get a lot of misunderstanding.
No, no, I know there's a lot of misunderstanding. But I said to this man, you know, don't, you know, you're doing, boy, are you doing some things wrong. You know, don't talk to me like that. And don't you tell me what to do with this boy, you know.
I want to talk to your son, or at least you're going to talk a little bit to him, right?
Yes,
all right, hang in there for just a second here. Raj Faneen with us, businessman and father from the San Fernando Valley who got into an altercation with the manager at Fraser Foods in Buena Park. And as a result, they had a police report taken. There was a physical altercation as Mr. Faneen was striking his son in the store, basically. A kind of corporal punishment that he says is very cultural and customary because his son refused to speak Arabic. And they speak Arabic with each other in their family, no matter where they are. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And we're online at philhenryshow.com. And we will be right back right after this with Mr. Raj Faneen. And Todd, his son, is coming up too.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. You know, this is kind of one of those, it's an interesting discussion we're having here with Mr. Raj Faneen of Sherman Oaks, California, who got into a physical altercation with the manager of a grocery store when he was administering corporal punishment to his son. Now, your son is how old, sir?
My son is 8.
He's 8 years of age?
Yes, sir.
And you, in your family... You insist on your native language, which was the Arabic language, be spoken to each other.
Yes, because the you know, the cultural.
For cultural considerations, I understand that. Because your son would not speak Arabic in this store, right?
Well, you know, Phil, this was because for this day, that the end of this day. You know, my son had been at the Knott's Berry Farm. You know, he's, what's the word? We indulged this boy, you know.
Okay.
And so, after we indulged, my son and his grandmother was there, his grandfather was there, and his mother is there. We're in the store. And I suppose you can say we expect some discipline from him. And thought that he's going to have to shoot on his day. But no, it's going to have to be. You know, he's saying to me now, he says, no, you are wrong, you are wrong. Why did you change your mind? Because my son said, Daddy, you are right, but now he knows he's on this, like a radio show, you know, and so...
is your son being a little, so in other words, he's going back and forth on this?
Yeah, you know, he said that, Daddy, I understand that you had to strike me, you know, because if I was told by this man not to strike my son, you know, and then he says, don't strike your son. I said, well, I'm going not to strike my son. I'm going to strike my son even harder.
Why did you say that?
Because I wanted to show this man his butting in, you know, he butted it in on what I was doing. He made it worse, you know. He made it worse when he stick his nose in. So I backhand my son, and the point that I made.
Okay, well, hold on for a minute. I'm going to get to that. You made the point that you think that corporal punishment.
Yes, Americans are. They don't use it no more. And
you made the point you think corporal punishment needs to be resurrected in this country.
Yeah, Americans don't use corporal punishment. And look at the state of the children. I know you say you believe there are some good kids in this country. I agree with you. There's good kids, you know. But I tell you that, you know, compared to my son Todd, who is an 8-year-old boy, if I said to you, Todd, I'm going to say to my son now, if I said to you, Todd, you go and help your mother do the dishes, right? Couldn't I say that? No, okay, without having that. He's still being a smart. He's a smart mouth, huh? My son is still being a smart mouth, but. You know I'm going to. I told him I'm going to smack him again.
How often do you smack your son, as you say, or?
Well, it's the mother's hand.
How often? Yeah. How often do you do this corporal punishment that you mete out this mother's hand? How often?
Well, I mean, if he's disobeys, like he just did now, I said to him, "You go to help your mother with the dishes," and he says, "No, I'm not. I'm going to listen to you on the radio." I said to him. That that Daddy is going to have to punish you for that. And he said to me, well, why don't you punish me then? And I said, I didn't say nothing. And that's when he said, because you are scared, you are on American radio, you know. And I said to him, it's not right of you to say this. It's not right of you to say that. Because I'm going to want to close my fist then. And then it's no longer...
Well, you're saying a lot of stuff here, Raj. You're talking about closing your fist as opposed to backhanding the kid. Why?
Because I said to him to do something. He said no, and then he gave me he gives me an argument, you know, and says, "Oh, you are afraid of American radio because he knows that I'm on the radio." I don't care. I don't care. No, I don't care. Yeah, watch. Todd, come here.
All right, now what are you going to do?
Oh, hold on. If my son challenged me, come here. I'm telling him to go help his mother. Yeah. See?
Did you strike that boy?
Yes, he's my son.
Well, all right, I got to ask you something. Why did you do that, number one? And number two...
Because...
No, and number two... Why did you do that so that we would all hear it?
Yeah, because he said to me no when I said to him, go help your mother. No. And he said no because he is trying to be a big shot. I don't know what you call it.
He's trying to show you up because you're on the radio.
Yes. That's number one. And I did so on the radio. So he will be embarrassed. Hold on for it. Why are you here? Oh, I better. Mr. Hendry, if you can give me...
You know what? I really believe, sir, that maybe you need to leave the air and take care of...
No. I'm not going to reward him that way. I'm not going to give my son the pleasure of knowing that he got me taken off of your show. Because I've got some people at work that are listening tonight, and... there are some people listening tonight, and we are recording this, you know. So I'm not going to have this boy who is acting like a punk. He's not going to ruin for me.
But you've just hit that boy twice.
Yes, and if he continues like he's back now, what are you? Let him rule me. You see, he just said some things to me that I don't like.
All right, hold on. As we talk about, hold on, Raj Fanin, as we talk about corporal punishment, 877-876-7445, he's just demonstrated what he does in his family, which is a backhand that they call mother's hand. It's a continuous backhanding the face if the kid disobeys. And Mr. Fanin thinks that America has gotten away
Phil
from it.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-7445, Phil Hendry Show. And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The News Talk and Entertainment Show that knows what we're talking about. And we're very grateful that you join us tonight. Raj Fanin, a businessman from Sherman Oaks, California, a father of a young son, Todd, also a husband. You guys spent the day at Knott's Berry Farm down in Buena Park. And as you were returning home, you stopped at a local grocery store there. It is a family rule that everyone speaks Arabic. Your son, Todd, was speaking English in the store.
Yes, and you know, if I can say...
Go ahead.
My son, you know, he's got no problem. Tonight, you know, he loves to speak Arabic, and he speaks Arabic here, you know. Todd, come here. Speak English. Yeah, he's refusing, you know. I don't know why he did what he did, but I think it's because he wanted he was spoiled, you know, on that day.
All right, but when you started smacking him, now a man interceded. He was the store manager.
Yes. This man, Bob Green.
Bob Green, because we know who he is.
You know this man.
Yes, we've had him on our show before. You were at his his store. Hold on for a minute. Turn that down. Bob?
Yeah, Phil.
Bob Green is with us, and Bob, you know this guy, you know Mr. Fanin, right?
Well, obviously I know him. How are you? I asked the gentleman, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay.
All right, I don't want to continue any bad blood here.
No, there's not going to be any bad blood. The guy was in my store, and he was backhanding this kid. Now, you know, the man made a good point here, this Mr. Fanin. Ordinarily, I'm not going to jump in and tell a guy how to discipline his child, but he was backhanding this kid back and forth. If you've ever seen Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs, when he took that billy stick to that cop, did you ever see that movie, Mr. Fanin?
No, I don't see. I don't know what you.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a scene where a serial murderer murders two cops.
Well, that's good, but not talk about the movie now. You know. I'm not talking of a movie.
Well, I'm talking of a movie because I'm trying to give Mr. Hendry an idea as to the sort of the autonomic method that you use to just back and forth and back and forth. And to me, Phil,
you are completely misrepresenting this.
And, well, if I'm misrepresenting, were you backhanding the kid back and forth?
Hold on. You said, Mr. Fanin, that that's what you did. It's kind of like a backhand one way. Do you use both hands?
When I do... What does he mean? When I do what?
When you're disciplining the kid.
He was asking about disciplining him. What do you think he was talking about? Masturbation?
Boy, you know something? I'm going to tell you something.
No, you had your chance with me.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Don't worry about what you thought he was talking about. You're using both hands, right?
I'm using both hands when I'm doing what?
When you're hitting the kid is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, see, he wants to make it filthy.
No, you made it filthy when you said he's not talking of a masturbation, you know.
All right, enough with that conversation. When I say do you use both hands, I meant do you use both hands when you're doing this corporal punishment?
Yes, you have to use both hands.
Yeah, Philly was going, he was trading off hands, left hand, backhand, right hand, backhand. And again, I will go to the Anthony Hopkins scene in Silence of the Lambs. I was shocked. And that's when I said, I grabbed his arm, and I said, why don't you tell Mr. Henry if you're saying,
because I told him, you know, that you use a ratio,
I didn't use anything racial, sir. No, I did not. Yes, you did. You said Sam Blank.
That's very racial. That is very racial.
No, Phil, it is not racial. That is what our soldiers call the enemy soldiers in Iraq. I'm not from Iraq, sir. I'm from Egypt.
First of all, you know, that's what the soldiers don't call them that. They call them ragheads. Secondly, the N-word, which is what you used, is enough to get anybody angry. So no wonder there was a fight.
Well, there was hold on. There was a fight, Mr. Henry, because I saw this guy smacking this kid's face back and forth. And the kid's face was bright red. And, did you speak to my son? No, I didn't speak to your son. Because you didn't care that I was to smack my son. You just didn't like Sam, you know what, in your store. No, I didn't. No, that is absolutely wrong. I used that term, and it was a mistake. But it had nothing to do with you being in my store. When I saw you backhanding that kid, and again, I'll say it, like Anthony Hopkins...
Well, all right, a lot of people haven't seen the movie or know what you're talking about. Anthony Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs. What I guess you're saying here is there was a certain level of brutality.
There was a very high level of almost enjoyment from this guy. Bam, bam, bam. Let me get my son. Yeah, get your son. Get this kid, Todd. Excuse me, sir. I'll speak to my own son. Well, get him. I'll speak to my own son, sir. Todd. Hey, Todd, this is Robert Greene of Fraser Foods. I'll speak to my own son, sir. Please, sir. I'll speak to my own son. Well, then speak to him.
Bob, don't interfere with this man while he's talking to his son.
Well, Mr. Henry, I can only say to you that I want to get the story here. I want to get the story, but I speak to my own son. Hey, Todd, this is Mr. Green. Please, sir, please.
Bob, don't do that, okay?
Okay, you ordinarily I would give the mother's hand. He just called you a name, and now I'm going to let him get away with it. I'm sorry, your son's calling me names, you're going to let him get away with it. That figures. What did he call me? I'm not going to tell you. Well...
I don't want to encourage that, Mr. Finine. If your son, now you had your son calling Mr. Green names that you ordinarily would punish him for, but now you won't punish him because Mr. Green has been rude to you, and I think and that is a very fair thing to say.
Well, I was not rude, Mr. Henry.
Yes, you were when you were trying to tell... You're talking to the guy's son.
I will speak to my own son, sir. All right, how many times are you going to tell me that? You already told me that about 900 times. You're speaking to your own son. I haven't heard you speak to your son. I'm going to do it now, sir. Good. Could I ask Mr. Green, would you turn your radio down, please? I don't have a radio on, buddy. And you don't have to call me buddy.
Let's keep this friendly. Can't we keep... You guys already had your altercation. You're lucky the cops didn't arrest you. Can't we keep it friendly?
All right, fine. I don't have a radio on. Well, sir, yes, you do, sir, because I'm listening, sir, to the radio. No, you are not. I don't have a radio on.
Turn the TV down, then.
All right, there. See, I've got a TV on. I'll turn that down. What a... You know something, sir? You are... What a pain in the ass. Oh, I'm a pain in the ass now. Did you hear that? Please, I'd like the record to show...
All right, the record shows that he called you a pain in the ass. Talk to your son, and let's find out what actually happened, if you don't mind, Mr. Finine.
All right, that's what... Is it for the one, Santa? Okay, my son said that he was speaking English. And this is where I came over. And please, sir, allow me to speak to my son.
Bob, if you don't shut up, I'm going to put you on hold.
Oh, go ahead. Okay, go ahead. What happened? And he said this man with a crooked... It looked... hairpiece was crooked. Oh, boy. You really got a pair on you, don't you? That is what my son is saying, sir. I don't wear a hairpiece. I told you this. And if you want to know why the fight started, it's because this guy said, why don't you straighten your toupee? And I said to him, if you use the word toupee to me one more time, then I'm going to start smacking you the way you were smacking the kid. And I was going to do the whole mother's hand on this guy. As much as I do not endorse Egyptian stuff. And see, that's what he said to me, Mr. Henry.
He said, I don't endorse no Egyptian things. I thought, then what?
But what about Staten Island?
Yeah. So he said to this man, why don't you, who is this man, crooked hairpiece? And that's when Green grabs me. And then you, Mr. Green, you talked about the slippage that I was going to be sued for.
That is absolutely right, Mr. Henry. And
all right, hold on. Because that television is turned up.
Sorry.
And secondly, we're getting into a whole area here now that is beyond the scope of what we wanted to talk about. We wanted to talk about...
Well, we were talking about corporal punishment.
No, hold on for a minute. We wanted to talk about corporal punishment. Now we're talking about your hairpiece. Is that right?
I want to say it again, Phil. You're a friend of mine, and so I'll let it go. But what do you mean I don't wear a hairpiece?
All right, I'm sorry. Your hair... system, okay?
Yes, and that's what he says to me. He says, it's a hair system. And my son was scared. My son said, who is this? My son used a dirty word, and I am ashamed of my son for him to say, who is this F word with the crooked hair? Is what you say, Todd? Yeah.
Your son said that?
Well, yes, my son said that.
Your son said, who's this?
All right, don't use the word. I don't like the word, okay?
Boy, I mean, you can't say the N-word now you can't say that, huh?
No, you can't.
So anyway, he used the F-word, and he said, who's this F-word with the crooked hairpiece? And that's what I said to the kid. I said, kid, I just saved the top layer of your skin, basically, from being flayed off. I said, kid, the guy that got his face eaten in Miami, do you want to look like that? And that's when this kid,
you scared my son when you said that. You scared him. Yeah, you scared him.
Well, I hope I scared him, because I said, kid, do you want to look like that guy that got his face eaten off? Or do you want to look like, you know, what you look like? And I thought it was very unfair, because the kid was talking about a crooked hairpiece. And if I said it once, I said it a million times, it's a hair system.
Okay, so please turn that television down.
All right, God.
Thank you. So, in other words, Bob, and I just want to talk to Bob and not to Raj and to his son.
All right. Todd,
hold on just with Todd. Hold on.
See, this is the whole thing. They don't speak English.
I speak English, sir. Don't worry about it.
All right.
I'm going to ask Bud to put the gentleman on hold, the Egyptian gentleman and his son, if you don't mind. Put them on hold for just thank you. Now, Bob, my question is this. Did this escalate after your hair system was referred to as a hairpiece?
No, it did not. I thought it was rude, what the guy said. I would never say to him, hey, dothead, although he's not a dothead. He's, but it's racially insensitive.
What's racially insensitive? I know that you're sensitive about your hair system.
You know, first of all, Phil, there should be no reason why I'm sensitive about a hair system. Turn this up, because this is the Discovery Show I want to see. This is the one about the zebras.
I can hear that TV, and I don't care if you want to see a zebra show. You got to turn it down.
Fine. Turn it down. You know, no wonder people say you got a bad mood, Phil. I like you, but a lot of people say you're a very angry guy.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, I saw this kid being smacked. Like Anthony Hopkins was trying to take the brains out of that one cop in the movie. I interceded, and that's when the kid said, who's the guy, and he's speaking English, who's the guy with the crooked toupee or something like that? And that's what I said to this kid. You don't know, you know, if you were a kid, you're a kid, you don't know how lucky you are being a kid. Otherwise, I'd join in with your dad. Okay, and the kid says something smart. And that's when the father took a look at me, and he goes, yeah, you're right, a crooked toupee. And I said, now, both of you guys are on my crap list, and I used a different word, because I said the two of you are on my crap list, because you both referred to it as a toupee, and it's a hair system. And that's when, you know, I guess the gloves came off, because he took a swing on me.
He swung first.
Well, I mean, I grabbed him, all right, I'll give you that. But, and that's another thing, Phil. He's talking to the cop, and he goes, oh, this guy grabbed me. And the cop's eyeballing me like I'm some kind of a, like I grabbed him between the legs. And
what did he say? What did Mr. Fineen say?
He said the guy grabbed me. And I think when you say a guy grabbed me, automatically you're going to assume, well, did he grab your testicles? That's what I would think.
All right, hold on.
If I'm out of line, tell me.
Hold on. Out of line, the whole conversation. All right, Robert Green joining us as he was the store manager that interceded when Mr. Fineen was disciplining his child and the child was getting this mother's hand, which was this backhanding. Green interceded, and it escalated after the kid and the father commented on Bob Green's crooked hair system. And I don't use the other word because it is a very sensitive area for him. Our number is 877-876-7445. We'll be back with your phone calls here in a moment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
The hair system is what the man said. That's
all I'm for.
No, it's not a toupee.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, online at philhendryshow.com. And next hour, Charlie LaFountain joins us. Mr. LaFountain is a grandfather of a 13-year-old girl that he and his wife, the girl's grandmother, are now the guardians of. And Mr. LaFountain caused quite a bit of controversy when he was on the show previous with his philosophy on how to keep your child safe from predators. We're going to be back with him in a few minutes next hour to talk about that. We're also going to be featuring on our podcast, the Free Phil Hendry Podcast, Episode 16, will be the original appearance of Mr. LaFountain on our Saturday show. So check that out. It'll all be available there, whether you have iTunes or whether you have Stitcher or Podcast Directory or you're subscribing directly through our site. Check out our episode 16. All right, getting back here now to Raj Fineen and Bob Green, and we're going to get some phone calls going here too as well. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Mr. Fineen and Mr. Green joining us, who both were involved in this altercation over the corporal punishment of Mr. Fineen's son, Todd. Let's get over here to Father James McQuarters, who's joining us from Belmar Academy this evening in Glendale. Father McQuarters, always good to talk to you.
It's great to speak with you, and I'm glad to be a part of this discussion because I think that it's important for all parents, no matter who, to hear the particulars of this, you know. Father, how are you? This is Bob Green. I'm fine, Bob, and Mr. Fineen. Good evening to you, sir. I don't think we've met. No, Father, my son Todd is a public school, you know, and it's no offense to you because of the Catholic, you know. Well, I didn't come on the program to speak to that, sir. What is that? I didn't come on the program to speak about that, sir. No, I know. I don't blame you. You aren't, and this is very difficult.
Let's stay off that topic.
I'm sorry?
Let's stay off that topic, Mr. Fineen.
No, but I simply want to know, was he, did you, you are not suspected of these?
No, sir, I did not abuse any children, sir. No, sir, I did not, sir. No, sir, I did not.
Okay, Father, I'm sorry to offend you. I just...
Now, look, Bill, I think this guy, this Fineen, is simply what he's trying to do now is smokescreen this thing. He doesn't want to get back to the subject of how he was beating the skin off his kid's face.
I was not beating the skin off. Allow me, please, sir, to say... This is a cultural discipline of my own son. Isn't that right, Todd?
Come on, officer, I'm a doctor.
Why, you did... Excuse me.
I want to hold on for a minute. What did the kid say?
That's none of your business. Come here, Todd. Come here. I said to come here.
You're not speaking English. You're speaking English. You're speaking English.
Yeah, I speak English when I work for you. Now, that right there is what I'm hearing. Did you strike that child?
Yes, I did, Father. It's none of your business.
Why did you strike the child?
Because I said to my son, come here. And he said to me, oh, you're speaking English. You're speaking English. And I said, also, he said a dirty word to me.
He said something in Arabic. What did he say?
He called me what is the Arabic equivalent of, I don't know what you say, is from where your food passes. from where your food passes.
What, did he call you Mouth?
No, he didn't call me the Mouth.
Okay, I know what he called you.
Yeah. I don't know. What did he say? I'm not clear myself, Phil.
He called him the equivalent of a butthole, okay?
Well, what's wrong with that? I am the boy's father, sir. That's what's wrong with it. Call me a butthole, huh? Wow! Yeah. Boy, I tell you something. When a child acts up and you're able to go ahead and lay into him a little bit, it feels good to me. Yeah, not to me, sir. That's all wrong. And I do an awful lot of work with children, especially gang members. And if I tried that with a gang member, Father McQuarters, he'd turn up all right. I'd turn up in three separate municipalities. My head, that would be in one city. My legs, that would be in another city. And my you-know-what would be with my head because it would be in my...
Okay, thank you very, very much, Father McQuarters. Thank you, Mr. Finine, and thank you, Bob Green. Next hour, it's Charlie LaFountain on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, he's going to say that it's just...
Shut up.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And online at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. A few months ago, and it might even be verging on a year ago, we had a man on our program, Mr. Charlie LaFountain, who's a grandfather and a grandfather and a husband, lives out in the an area here in our area of the world called the Inland Empire. We're in the L.A. area. The Inland Empire is out in the interior of the state in Southern California. They're from Riverside. And he was talking about his granddaughter. Both he and his wife have guardianship over this child and what they did to protect her from predators. And it's now been a year, and we're going to talk with him a little bit more about this program. And by the way, he was telling us during that broadcast that he had intimidated himself some predators and individuals that they thought were unsavory. I must tell you that we're going to be talking to him this evening from he is going to be talking to us by way of a cell phone aboard a DC-10. And this is, the story itself is kind of interesting, and I don't know if you can hear me. Charlie?
I can hear you fine, Phil. This is Charlie LaFountain here, and we are in a DC-10, which is a passenger aircraft, really, from the 1940s, and my company has recommissioned this particular DC-10 to inaugurate these nostalgia flights over Arizona and New Mexico. In the hopes that we'll attract people, tourists, to enjoy the old ways of flying. And we have even a stewardess, a flight attendant, and we're called stewardesses in the old days, serving drinks. It's an experience we hope people enjoy. We happen to be, my wife and I, are aboard this evening as we're flying our way to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
So it's a DC-3.
It's a DC-3, so it's a two-engine. The interesting part of flying a DC-3, if you have airplane buffs out there, the DC-3 has two wheels, and so the tail sits on the runway. And in order for the aircraft to get altitude, as it proceeds on the runway, all of the passengers and most of the weight aboard the aircraft must be shifted to the front of the aircraft so that you've got as much weight as possible off the tail section. And that way the tail is going to lift off the ground, and then the passengers can move back to their seats. But it's just part of the interesting experience of flying one.
You know, I flew in a DC-3 once myself.
Did you?
Yeah, it was from Miami to Key West, and it was fun. One of the things about it is you're not very high, right?
Well, you can get, the elevation can get 10 to 15,000 feet. Generally, we will have it at about 1,000 feet or less, just so people can look at the scenery and
yeah, because we flew over we flew out of Miami and went right down the Keys.
Well, must have been gorgeous.
Yeah, it was very beautiful, and we're flying over the Keys, looking at the ocean, and landed at Key West, and it was a lot of fun. But we're here to talk a little bit about your granddaughter, right?
Well, yes, we are, and I apologize because we had this scheduled, and I was told by Jim Sebastian, who is my vice president of operations, that we were going to have this flight this evening, and so I'm hopeful, Phil, that it won't be too distracting.
Not at all, sir. So your granddaughter, who was and still is in your home, and you have guardianship over this young lady. And by the way, what is her name?
My granddaughter's name is Roberta, and she is a 14 now. She was 13 when I first talked to you about her.
But why do you and your wife have not custody?
It's guardianship and custody is the same thing. We've not adopted her, but we are the official guardians of this child. And the reason why is because her mother had a series of episodes. Her mother has a mental condition, a psychotic condition, I guess, a schizophrenia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know, she's been hospitalized. We have her on medication now. She's an outpatient, but we don't feel that this is the time for her and her daughter to be reunited, although they see each other. And I felt it was best that we took the child in hand and had her in our home because there's no telling, you know, if you've got a parent that is, you know, is not healthy enough to take care of a child.
No explanation necessary, sir. My hat is off to you and your wife. At this time in your life, any grandparent that takes a child in and raises a child, man, they've got endless respect for me.
Well, I appreciate that, Phil. It's a heck of a thing. There's no question about it, having to take in your own children are unable to be parents, and then you have to take in these children. And more, it seems to be the case with a lot of people in my generation, my age group, that we're having to raise kids because... people your age, no comment on you, Phil, but people your age are just not capable of, there's a lot of drug use, there's a lot of drug addicts, there's a lot of, I guess, alcoholism, there's violence and mental illness, and it's a horrible situation. So I took my my granddaughter and I said that we're going to keep this child safe.
All right, now I had you on my show last year, Charlie.
Yes.
Talking about what your philosophy was in keeping kids safe from predators. And at that time, you said that it was a simple matter of making the child as unattractive as possible. And you know you took a lot of static.
Listen, Phil, if there's one thing I've taken in my life, it's a lot of static. But Charlie the Fountain, I stand by. Charlie the Fountain stands by what he says and what he does. And I would tell you that when Charlie the Fountain says something, Charlie the Fountain is going to stone still next to what I say. And a lot of people say that that's inflexible. I think a lot of people say that it's almost unhealthy. But I call myself a cigar store Indian. And the reason why I call myself that is because once I say something, then I'll stand next to that idea as if I'm a cigar store Indian. You can't move me. You could take an axe and chop at me, and of course I'm being figurative here.
No, but I get your idea.
Yeah, right. And so I am the philosophical. That's what the guys call me because we meet every morning. Myself and there's about three or four other guys that I know from the neighborhood and so forth. And we meet every morning at Denny's. We have the slam, whatever they call that, breakfast. And they say, "Here comes Charlie, the cigar store Indian." And I say, you know what, I take that as a compliment.
All right, so tell me about your granddaughter.
I'm sorry to go on, Phil. I apologize.
No, that's okay. It's okay. I think it's cool. You're meeting with your buddies in the morning. Tell me about your daughter, your granddaughter, and what you did and what you talked to us about and how it went.
Well, the philosophy is a very simple one, Phil. You take a child like this, and she's not old enough to be dressing up and going out in this nonsense. She's a little girl, so you don't have to worry about this nonsense about, oh, she's got to smell pretty and look pretty because... No. We encouraged Becky to eat. We encouraged her to eat pancakes and this kind of... She put some weight on. She's going to get the weight off. and she broke out, and that will end as well. But for this period in her life, we decided that for her to put on some weight, to have a little bit of bad skin, to not bathe, to not, you know, in other words, to be repugnant as much as possible. Now, that's not to say that she's unhealthy. There's a big difference between not having hygiene, and what people will say to me, well, this is the most terrible thing I've ever heard, and they'll go on and on. I'll say, what would you rather have, a nice-smelling dead kid?
And see, that's kind of language, though, you know.
Well, I understand that, but it gets people's attention.
To say, would you rather have, because I read that, would you rather have a nice-smelling dead kid or a kid that you said smells like a dead body but is alive?
Yes, I use those words very, very specifically because I wanted people to understand what we're dealing. What are the stakes when our children have these predators and they're everywhere? You know, the stakes are you'll have a dead kid that smells real good in a party dress, or you've got a living granddaughter that stinks your car out, literally. And that's what I said, and I stand by that.
All right, Charlie LaFountain with us. Hold on, Charlie, and how's the plane ride?
It's absolutely comfortable. I got some coffee here. I might even have a cocktail. I'm not sure. We are due into Albuquerque probably within the hour. And we're just having a very, very, very beautiful evening this evening, Phil, over the desert.
All right, Charlie LaFountain with us aboard a DC-3 flying to Albuquerque, New Mexico this evening. Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we're going to continue this discussion of the way Charlie and his wife deal with their granddaughter and the threat of predators. The girl is basically allowed to put on weight, not bathe. A lot of things that just make the kid, as Charlie said, stink and be repulsive. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Be right back with Charlie LaFountain after this.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
World-famous
Phil Hendry Show.
A little bit. And it's, we're talking with Charlie LaFountain here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's fun to listen to, literally, you're inside this DC-3, which is a propeller-driven aircraft over New Mexico tonight. Is it noisy?
No, it's not really noisy, Phil, and I know what you mean by there's a lot of propeller-driven aircraft, prop jobs, as we call them, that can get very noisy. It depends, certainly, on the kind of fuselage. The DC-3... McDonnell Douglas built the DC-3 with a certain kind of insulation in their fuselage using the same, I don't know what the word is that they use in recording studios, but using the same kind of...
Well, is it baffling?
Well, it's not, but we could use that word. I forget, but they use that inside the fuselage itself, and they also use a component that is called dusting. It's not a fabric. It's not a material so much as it's a process of the manufacturing of fuselage that further insulates. And so it's rather quiet. I know you can probably hear the engines. And a moment ago we hit some turbulence. And there's nothing like turbulence in a DC-3 because you can feel it. It's not even. It's more dramatic, I think, than even a smaller propeller-driven plane.
All right, Charlie, let's talk about your daughter. So, your granddaughter, I mean.
Yes, our granddaughter, Becky.
Okay. Her name is Roberta.
Yes, yeah, so when we call her Becky, she didn't want to be Berta. She didn't show like that, so we said, well, we'll use her. We'll call her Becky. Whoa, there was another one there.
Where are they?
Yeah, I'm traveling with some of the guys. I've got some of the guys here, Phil, from my unit in Korea. I was in the 8th Air Force, and we were stationed in a place called, which today, you know, there's no military base in France. We were in Bordeaux, France, though, and we had the 8th Air Force. And I've got some of my guys. How are you feeling a bit?
Very interesting.
That's Fit Jackson, Phil.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm very good.
Tell Mr. Henry how you like the flight.
Yeah, it's been very interesting, sir, and, of course, being an old Air Force guy...
Oh, all right,
So these are all Air Force buddies.
Yeah, the Air Force guys from the old days, right?
All right, your granddaughter then, sir, beginning last year to keep these predators away, you let her just kind of not bathe? How did she feel about that?
Well, she's a kid. I think there's a misnomer, Phil, when you talk about girls. Oh, yeah, I just felt that one. We got some...
Whoa!
Wow, that was a big one. We just hit a big bump. We go over, find out if we're going over a weather pattern and have the pilot fly above it. Find out if we're going over a weather pattern and have the pilot fly above it.
Okay.
I said to find out if we're going over a weather pattern and have the pilot pilot. Find out if we're going over a weather pattern.
That's very interesting.
Find it.
Well, hey, Charlie, stay with me, man.
I'm sorry, Phil. I just wanted to. Wait a minute. We hit some turbulence. Oh, boy. Have you ever been through turbulence, Phil, where it feels like the plane just dropped about 3,000 feet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very common.
Yeah, that's just what happened right there. So I asked the flight attendant, Karen, find out if we're going over a weather pattern, and if we've got to paint the plane. I can't even say it right. I'm so nervous.
Well, yeah, I'll do it.
Now, give me the phone back, Ben, please. So, these guys have been drinking, Phil, and I apologize.
So let's get back to your granddaughter.
Yes, my granddaughter, who I love dearly, but I said to her, honey, for your own good, I'd appreciate it very much if you wouldn't bathe or wash, brush your teeth, or use mouthwash for these specified periods. Now, I don't want my granddaughter walking around stinking like a goat, but I think that in the summer months, when the kids are out and they're more at risk... And you remember, Phil, I started this last summer, and...
Right, I remember, because the kids are going to be out of the house, and they're going to be at the beach, and they're going to be on their own a lot.
That is correct, right. So I said, I'd appreciate it very much. And my granddaughter, to her benefit, I said, honey, you know what's going on. And her friends started doing it. I talked to Cynthia and Pat McMichaels, the friends of mine, and they've got their granddaughter, and some of the parents, and we all got into this. And I did some carpooling to the pool, and I can tell you that if you love your children, you can put up with anything. And I had four of them in the car, and this was last July as we were going over to the public pool over here in San Bernardino. And I said to the girls, get into the car, and I love my granddaughter so much. And I will be honest with you, my wife's here, and you remember, right? Yeah, the smell in that car, and I understand, Phil, it was a round trip, probably 100 miles. And
a round trip, 100 miles to go from Riverside to San Bernardino? That seems like an awfully long...
We were picking up... Why was it a 100-mile round trip? I took surface streets, that's right. I don't know why. I guess they were doing construction. And now that solves the problem. I'm glad I'm talking to you, Phil. I wondered why it was I put myself. I said it smelled because you've got these four little girls that haven't bathed, they haven't brushed their teeth for weeks, and not only that, but they're eating anything they want, so their skin's lousy, they're big, and you've got to get these little kids into the car, and you're squeezing them in, and then the odor. I keep going back to the odor. So, in any event, and boy, I'm remembering it now.
You talking about your granddaughter?
Yes, I am. Hold on, Vin. I got one of my buddies. So, we just hit some more turbulence, Phil. We just hit some more turbulence.
Are you guys okay?
Yeah, we're fine, but I'm trying to get the flight attendant. Find out if we're hitting a weather pattern and why the pilot won't fly over. I'm sorry, I'm messing it up.
Find out if it's a weather pattern.
I know how to talk. I can... Find out if it's a weather pattern and if the pilot's panning. Okay. So, in any event, Phil, I said to Becky, I said, we'll go to the plunge. And I think I took surface streets that day because I don't know why. I had an episode, I guess. I have these episodes where I forget. And so I'm just driving aimlessly. That might have been it. And
you have episodes where you forget?
Yes, I do. And the doctor said to me he hopes it isn't a harbinger of Alzheimer's, but sometimes I'll forget and I will just drive and drive for miles.
All right, we're talking here with Charlie the Fountain. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Got some people on the line, some parents on the line who want to talk to you. Steve Dooley is checking in from Western Estates. Steve, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Mr. Henry. Tell a man here, can you hear me? Say that again, sir. I wanted to ask you, my wife, Bobby Dooley, we have a pair of teachers?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You recommend that the kid stinks like that, and we live in a gated community, you know?
I understand, sir.
And I got a kid that smells, you know, like seven shades of you-know-what. You can't have that walking around.
Well, what the advice I give to people who live in gated communities where you have to have a certain decorum, and I understand that, sir. Believe me, I understand. The children have to have a certain decorum in a presentation. You can't have a kid walking around smelling like a dung heap. Right?
No, that's it.
And so I would say, in a gated community, you have less of a threat of this kind of predator. So the kids can probably get them to take a bath a little more often. But I wouldn't run the risk. I wouldn't run the risk at all of having these kids smelling, you know what they like to say in the commercials, and I hate these commercials, and I've written to the networks, kissing soft, or they smell like a daisy or something like that. Yeah, I'll bet they smell like a daisy. I bet you they smell real good as they put them in a pine box.
That's what I'm trying to say, you know. And my wife, the whole idea of a kid stinking it out.
I understand, sir.
All right, let's take a break, okay?
Yeah, let's take a break. Oh, God, help me.
What is going on?
It's just turbulence. Don't worry about it. Did that go out over the air?
Did what go out over the air?
When I asked God to help me?
Yes, it did. Anyway, 877-876-7445. The Phil Henry Show. We'll be back with Charlie LaFountain and more of your phone calls right after these messages.
That kid smelled bad.
I understand, sir. I can't do anything about your kid.
Scrub it down.
Phil Henry.
Phil Henry Show, Charlie.
Yeah, it just we had a little bit of turbulence, and Phil, I was in the Air Force, so this is, I'm fine with it, but damn,
that's a big one.
Vince here with his wife. I've got some of the guys I told you, Phil, from my Air Force outfit and a squadron I was in Bordeaux, France, and we've been hitting some turbulence here.
Yay!
Yeah, that had ever. Oh boy,
was that more?
Yeah. I want to speak with you more and more and more and more about my granddaughter and what we are doing in Riverside and in the Bailey Park area of Riverside, where my wife and I live, in protecting our grandkids from the predatory nature of some of these fruits, and not fruits, but the poovers. But I'm having to deal with this aircraft today. God.
Woo!
See, that was another one. We just dropped about 3,000 feet. Tell the pilot to take it easy, will you, please?
Okay. Are you distracted?
It's a little distracting, yeah. It's a little distracting. I was an Air Force pilot, and for me to sit here and worry about whether I'm going to... And I've been sitting here talking about my daughter, my granddaughter, and other granddaughters smelling as bad as they do in order to keep these predators away. And I am frightened I'm going to arrive in Albuquerque. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to stink.
Why is that? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, okay. I don't need to spell it out, do I?
No, never mind. I tell you what, take some phone calls. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking here with Charlie LaFountain. And we are discussing what he and other neighbors of his instituted last summer, which is to protect their kids from the predators by making the children physically unappealing. And I got to tell you, I heard a lot of people say that it's completely wrong-headed. Let me go to a phone call.
Well, you're hearing people saying it's wrong-headed. Why?
Well, we can discuss it. Austin, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil, how you doing? This is Austin, Phil, and this man that you're talking to, I heard him on your program last year, and I remember him saying that this was a foolproof way. You remember using those words, sir?
What happened there?
I'm sorry. Hold on for a minute, will you? Hold on. What is that? We hit more turbulence.
Well, yeah, you're hitting turbulence all right, because I think the turbulence, sir, if you want my honest opinion, is I think you've got a turbulent life. I think your life and the way you think about things, the way that you process things, I think is turbulent. I think there's turbulence between your ears.
Well, you can make all the jokes you want, sir, but I can tell you this. That my granddaughter has never been approached or attacked. She's safe.
Well, of course she's safe, but that could have a lot to do with a lot of different things, you know.
Well, all right, you can speculate all you want, but my point is
your point is what, sir? You're spending more time worrying about that aircraft.
Are you, sir, we are hitting some turbulence. We're in a DC-3.
No, I've been listening to you on the broadcast. As the plane hits turbulence, I'm listening to you crying and moaning. And
I don't think I'm crying and moaning.
Hey, that's the pilot. Yeah, well, who's that?
Hold on, you got a lot of noise going on there, Charlie. That we need to kind of filter out. So, what's your point, sir? The gentleman calling.
Well, sir, my point is this: I agree with you, and it was something that I had addressed last year. I talked to this man. I said, that is a completely idiotic way of protecting a child, because children, a pervert, and these individuals that prey on children, they don't care what the kid smells like. That's got nothing to do with anything. And
you know, I heard that argument.
Hold on for a minute, sir, if you don't mind. They don't care what the kid smells like. And the reason why I know that is because my own uncle was put into prison for this very thing. And I can tell you, it was an absolute black day on the honor of our family when my uncle was put in prison.
Your uncle was in prison for abusing children?
That is correct. Little young ladies.
So in other words, that makes you an expert?
No, sir, it doesn't make me an expert. But even my uncle will tell you, who was in prison for some 18 years, even he'll tell you that what they smell like, it doesn't make no never mind to him. You know, he'll tell you they can smell like the back end of a cow on a blazingly hot and humid day in Florida. Like at about, say, 2 o'clock, 2:30, you know, just before it rains, when the...
All right, we understand. We understand.
You really have an image in your mind, sir, and if you're comfortable with that...
No, I'm not comfortable with it. I'm not comfortable. You're the one that wants a kid to stink like that. And I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's going to solve any problems. And I talked to you last year about it.
I don't remember, sir, and that's not to disrespect you, but I can assure you, sir, I have a granddaughter that I love very. Do you have children, sir?
Yes, I do. I've got two sons, and they're very small. These are two boys.
Well, I'm talking more about these young ladies.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, are you going to make do the boys stink it out?
No, because I don't know about the boys. If they wanted to, but I'm talking about my daughter, my granddaughter.
You keep calling her your daughter. Is she your daughter or your granddaughter?
She's my daughter and my granddaughter, all right? Wow.
What does that mean?
Never mind, please. Never mind. There was more turbulence.
Hey, well, I don't care about the turbulence. I want you to explain that last line.
What does that mean, she's your daughter and your granddaughter?
If I tell you, I'm in the middle of turbulence, and now I have spilled inadvertently a family something.
Yeah, you did.
I did. I'm afraid I did. Mr. Henry, is there any way I can tell you this off the air?
No, you can't tell me off the air. I don't want to hear if it's what I think it is, and it must be. No, I don't want to hear it.
Mr. Henry, most men never have to face the fact that given the right time and the right place, they're capable of
everything.
Now, what is this, Chinatown?
Yeah, I thought I recognized that. I thought I recognized a line from Chinamantown, and that's what it is. It's not called Chinamantown. It's called Chinatown.
Well, what are you quoting Chinatown for?
I don't know. But
get out of here. Thank you very much, sir, for your call. Not you. 877-87. Why are you quoting Chinatown?
Mr. Henry, there comes a time in every phone conversation with anybody that you've got to get rid of the guy. I don't know what the guy's point was.
That's why you said that?
Yeah, so you get pissed off and throw him off the line. I don't know. I'm trying desperately. Mr. Henry, this is now becoming something that I cannot control, and my bladder... Yeah, look at that. I have lost control of some of my bodily functions because of this turbulence. Now, I will tell you, I don't want the impression given to anybody that's listening.
You know, are we talking about your granddaughter or not, and what exactly is happening aboard that aircraft?
I told you that we have very bad turbulence.
I understand that, but are you going to crash?
I don't know we're not going to crash, and I wish you wouldn't say that because it's a little bit of a superstition that you don't want to talk about. Just did it again. You feel that?
Yeah, I did. It almost went down about 10,000 feet.
Yeah, fellow, you feel that one, Red?
Okay, are you with me here, Charlie?
I'm with you, but I'm very confused. And I'm extremely anxious, and I couldn't stand talking to that caller any longer, so I had to come up with something that would create such a shock that you'd need to throw him off the air, because just as I was commencing my conversation with that man, I had told you that I was afraid that I would not have full control over my physical faculties, and I... Yeah. So I've got to get up and clean myself up.
Well, you know what? If things are that bad aboard that aircraft, I think we're done with this conversation.
Why?
Because we're not making any sense anyway, okay? The last caller you had on the line, you know...
That guy was a pain in the ass. I didn't want to talk to him. He talked to me last year. All he wanted to do was call up and argue with me. I want people on this talk show that I can lecture. I don't want people to debate with me. What the hell do you think I am, anyway?
An open-minded guy.
Well, forget it.
877... Yeah, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Rudy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show, sir.
Yes, Phil, and good evening to the gentleman. I wanted to say that I'm appreciative of this broadcast tonight because I think it's important to keep the children safe. Secondly, I want to say that I hope you are safe aboard the aircraft, sir, because it sounds a bit shocking or heart-stopping, you know?
Well, I can tell you that it's not been the easiest ride, sir, but we're going to survive.
You're saying that you want to not to give a child a bath or cleanliness or whatever it is, so that the pervert is not going to be attracted to the child.
Yes, sir, that is the thinking. And my granddaughter this summer hasn't bathed since the end of May, and I can tell you she's right.
Oh, my God, you know.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I told you.
Yes, but sir, what if the child is the child has their own self-respect, you know?
What are you talking about? I'm talking about a 14-year-old child. She hasn't bathed since the end of May. She stinks like an open sewer. But that child is safe, and that's all I care about. That's all I care about. And I don't care. You can say what you want, but that child is safe.
Okay, so in other words, you think the perverts are not going to harm the children if they stink?
That is exactly correct.
May I say this to you, sir? Although my experience is with women, I would never be with a child because I am not a sick individual. But I'm going to tell you this, that I have been with some women in my life that smell like a cow. And you know what I mean by cow?
Yes, I think I know what you mean by a cow.
I have been with cows. I have been literally cows, not a four-legged cow. I have been with a two-legged cow.
All right, before you go on, Rudy, I don't want anybody getting the idea that we're comparing perverts who are mentally unbalanced, who have got a sociopathy, all kinds of problems, who are a danger to kids, and you wooing women.
No, I I think you misunderstand. That's a very good point, Mr. Henry. I think this guy's coming on here to talk about, you were going to, you know.
Well, I think what you're going to say here, Rudy, is, well, hey, the smell never bothered me.
Why can't I say that? I'm not trying to, because it doesn't apply to what you're talking about.
You're talking about normal heterosexual relating between a man and a woman, okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, see, but no, it's not that normal.
Okay, it ain't that normal, but we're talking, on the other hand, we're talking about a crime being committed.
But let me say, I'm not, you're right, and I agree with you, but still, the only point I'm trying to make here, you know, is that, well, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say you can put up with any kind of a stink so long as it's a female. I didn't say that either. I said I can put up with any, well.
I don't want to talk about this. It's got nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Hey, look at that, Phil. Hey, the guy said the GD. Well, I came on the program. What to see? Oh, go cry. Go cry on somebody else's shoulder, okay? Cesar Romero. I think that is a cheap shot. You know that? I don't care what you think. I think that is a cheap shot to call me Cesar Romero. I came on the program with good. And by the way, Cesar Romero, who is a great star. Well, you're going to start to tell me about the Latin film industry now, all the great stars. I couldn't be more bored. But I'm going to say to you, and by the way, Cesar Romero was gay. How's that feel? I heard on this program last hour that they wanted to beat each other up, these two men. I would love to beat you up. You'd like to beat me up. The only problem is actually doing that. And that would be a big one. Speaking of big ones, you go ahead. We'll lay it on the bar. And you and I.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I can't.
877-876-7445 here on the Phil Henry Show. All right, so we get rid of that caller. Thank you. All right, so we're going to take a break because we are way late for our break. And are you doing okay in the aircraft there, Charlie?
No, I'm not doing okay in the aircraft. I told you. I went ahead and soiled everything. The seat, the pants, the underwear, my shoes, some of my luggage. Because why? I'll tell you why. Because I had to fly to Albuquerque tonight in a team.
877-876-7445. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The
I
Phil Henry Show.
Say, no. We're stuck here.
That's no fair.
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
I'm praying to God. All I can do is pray to God.
What about me?
All you can do is pray to God. That's all I'm telling you.
Nobody bought it.
No, they're not going to buy it. But all you can do now, all any of us can do, if you listen to me, is just get on your knees and pray to God. Pray to God. Ask God, please let us land the plane safely. And
we're on the air now, okay?
We're on the air. Hold on. We're on the air. Back on the air. I wish you'd tell me that we're on the air, Phil, because I was just telling everyone.
No, we heard what you were saying.
Right. And I didn't. I was telling everyone to pray.
Are you afraid the plane isn't going to land safely?
I'm worried, and I've always had a fear of flying.
You were in the 8th Air Force, and you have a fear of flying.
Yes. Now, let me explain that. There is nothing unusual about that. Okay, we're all right. There's nothing unusual.
What happened then?
We hit some turbulence.
So you react to turbulence in that manner?
Yes.
I knew somebody like you. My old partner in radio, we used to fly places for our radio show. And one time we flew to Europe, a couple times we flew to Europe. And every time there was a bump, he almost came out of his skin.
Mr. Henry, I am not that bad. I was in the Air Force. And
well, you were in the Air Force, but you have a fear of flying.
Yes, I have a fear of flying, and I joined the Air Force, if you'll let me finish a point, for the first time in this GD show of yours.
Well, if you feel that way, sir.
All right, don't start pulling your skirt up and looking for a place to squat. All I'm trying to say.
Wait, hey, well, hold the phone here, man. You're the guy that's getting upset.
I'm not getting upset. I'm saying I had a fear of flying, which I still have. That's why I joined the 8th Air Force, and I was very. Oh, no.
That's fast.
Okay, that was another piece of turbulence. And the reason why I joined the Air Force.
Hold on for a minute. That was you going through turbulence.
This is
Okay, we just did a bump. We're all right. What?
Your reaction to turbulence is way over the top.
Excuse me. I said I defeated. Do you know what it's like to be able to defeat a fear like that? And to man up and to look a fear in the eye and defeat it the way I did by joining the 8th Air Force? Okay, no problem. And
did you fly aircraft?
What's that?
Did you... What's that? A thing that flies?
No, I know what you mean. What did you say?
Did you fly the aircraft?
Did I fly them? No, I was a mechanic. I was a mechanic. I was on the ground. But just hold the phone because I know where you're going. I was in the Air Force, wasn't I?
Yes, but you didn't fly airplanes.
It doesn't matter. I was in the... No, please, God, don't. Please, God, don't let me... Okay, we're good. I know I'm having a...
You're having some of the most extreme reactions to turbulence I've ever heard. You're going, please, God, please, God.
You are making a bigger issue out of it than you have to. Can we just continue the conversation and not pay attention to my reaction?
Go ahead.
What I was saying was this.
No.
What I was saying was this.
God.
Excuse me. What I was saying was this. I was in the Air Force. Okay? I manned up, and I defeated my fear of flying by joining the Air Force. You're asking me, did I actually fly aircraft?
No, I don't want to die!
No, we're all right. You're asking me...
I can't stand this. I can't listen to this. We're not having a normal conversation.
Why don't you just ignore my reactions and see those as a man facing his fear? I'm on the airplane right now. Am I screaming?
No, but every time you guys hit turbulence...
That is a smoke...
Sounds like a monkey.
Yeah.
All right, we're good. What happened?
You just went into a whole chimpanzee routine.
Oh, bull crap.
That's exactly what you did. You want to ask Bud?
I'll ask Bud. I'll ask a guy with part of his brain missing.
You did. You sounded just like a monkey.
Well, Bud, I don't want to tell you what you sound like, but it's got a tail, too, and it swings from trees. Oh, man. God, I hate life. I really hate life.
And where's your granddaughter tonight?
And wouldn't you like to know?
Nope. Are you kidding me?
Why are you asking?
I'm asking because I'm wondering who's taking care of the kid.
Well, okay. Her mother.
Her mother who's got the psychotic drug problem.
The drug problem isn't psychotic. She is. Oh, that's right.
No.
See, now you feel bad about leaving her with her mother.
Oh, it was turbulence. Now, anyway.
Get out of here. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show with our News and Information Hour coming up.
I do want to die.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, and it is our News and Information Hour here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. With me is Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Bud?
Yeah, pretty interesting first couple hours.
Yeah, that one guy, I thought that guy was going to come out of the airplane.
Well, that guy, Charlie LaFountain, has got serious problems now, and as is the case with many of the people that are on our show. Charlie, by the way, is going to be featured on our podcast, which will be episode 16 tomorrow. Will most likely debut. You'll be able to upload it sometime midday Pacific time. And it will be the original appearance of Mr. LaFountain on this show when he was talking about this nonsense, having his granddaughter not bathe and all of this other ridiculous stuff that it was kooky.
Yeah, but then we found out the guy, he was dumping into his underwear.
Yeah. We get a lot of guests on this show that soil themselves, and that was... But to hear that guy talking, and not only the fear of the flying, fear of the aircraft, the extreme panic attacks that he had, and the guy is a veteran of the 8th Air Force.
Yeah, he said the 8th Air Force, and that were all the guys in his squadron.
All the guys in his squadron. Anyway, So that'll be episode 16 of the Free Phil Henry podcast, debuting tomorrow. And so it'll be Charlie's original appearance on our program that you may have heard or you might have missed. And if you did, check it out. Ex-smokers gain more weight than thought. By the way, we have in our News and Information Hour, our New York Times front page on our videocast on Phil TV and HD. This particular newspaper we're looking at, and I actually blew up the screen so that Dan could see it because we were using a split screen. And you know what? I got rid of that. It's from this date, July 11th, 1957. And there isn't a whole lot in the news here that I could see that was all that groundbreaking until I got all the way over to this far right-hand column. And this was really almost, it's kind of amusing. And remember, this is the old days of communist Russia. This is 1957, and the news is Malenkov to run electric station in Central Asia.
What's that?
An electric station is the hydroelectric plant.
Oh, for the people that have electricity.
Yeah, what'd you think it was?
It sounded like it's like a train set or something.
A train set? What does that mean?
Well, it sounded like he was going to be running electric station for a train set.
No, man. What is it with you guys? Are you kidding? But here's the thing that I thought was very interesting about this story. This is 1957. This was on the heels of the ousting in Soviet Russia of a sort of committee of leaders after Stalin died, which was a terribly turbulent period in the history of the Soviet Union, now, for the most part, Russia. But after Stalin died and the end of that really terrible period, that guy, Stalin was a murdering dictator. And the guy that ran the KGB back then, wow.
Who's he?
He was some guy by the name of Beria, B-E-R-I-A. And he was just I can't even describe it. The guy was an iron-fisted, totalitarian, police state guy, and all kinds of cats went into that Lubyanka prison, which was the prison they had in Moscow, and you never saw them again, man. I mean, that was it. You went into that prison, bye, see you later.
What'd they do?
Well, what do you think they did?
Three guesses, and the first two don't count. You mean they killed them?
Yeah, they killed them.
Why?
Just get rid of them. Just get rid of them, man.
What about, like, they have a lawyer?
A lawyer? Yeah, they had a lawyer. They had a lawyer, the kind of lawyer you got in that kind of a system. Guy would just stand there in front of the judge and go, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir.
So they didn't have no lawyer.
No, man, it's totalitarianisms.
Say that again?
What is that?
Well, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Totalitarian. Anyway, so what happened was is this. Stalin croaks, and there are many to this day who believe he was poisoned. I think we get a little, crazy with this stuff. He'd had a series of strokes. He dies. Now comes a power vacuum, if you will. And the first guy that tried to step into it was that Beria guy. But when Stalin died, Beria didn't have a protector. He no longer had the guy that shielded him. And he got, that was the end of that guy. And
what did he do to him?
I think he got executed. I mean, I think they took him to the basement. If you went down to the basement there at the Lubyanka prison, it was like, oik! They'd go ahead and just kill you. But point being that after he died, now came a sort of a committee leadership type of concept. They had three or four guys. And that lasted for a couple of years. And the newspaper that we've got here, July of 57, seems to be a paper that is reporting on the aftershock where those guys were gotten rid of and Khrushchev took over. Nikita Khrushchev was one of the most famous and significant leaders in the history, the short history of the Soviet Union. And I remember his name all through my childhood growing up. When we were in school, I mean, the name Khrushchev, when we were taking current events and all of that stuff, that was a big name. And apparently he'd just been promoted to the overall premiership. And this guy Malenkov, one of the guys that was in this committee that got kicked out of there, was relegated to running an electric station. So it gives you an idea of the, if you will, and I put this in quotes, the egalitarian concept here behind, comrade, we've ousted your ass, and you're out of here, man. Now, that doesn't mean he goes into retirement on a villa on a lake someplace. This cat, he got another job. He got a job in Central Asia, man. Freaking Siberia, for all I know.
Running at some electric station.
Yeah. So you go from being one of the most powerful men in the world, the head of one of the biggest nations in the world, at the head of one of the biggest armed forces in the world, a guy, a player, who's on the front page of every newspaper in the Soviet Union and practically the world every single day of your life. And now what are you doing? You're throwing switches and filling out forms in Kazakhstan someplace.
Man, I think I'd rather be shot.
Anyway, so that was that. That's today's little paper. That's the front page of the New York Times, July 11th, 1957, man. Woo! All right, here's a story that I can tell you is part bullcrap because I gained 40 pounds. No, it's not bullcrap, but in any event, here is the story. Ex-smokers gain more weight than thought. Really? Here's the average weight gain, 11 pounds. Now, I gained 40.
Well, you ain't average, man.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. You're right, I'm not average. The average weight gain associated with giving up smoking is much higher than previously thought, experts have found. People can expect to put on 5 kilograms, that would be 11 pounds, within a year of quitting.
What's a kilogram?
That's a unit of measurement that they use in England.
Why?
Because they just use that, man. That's just what they do.
Yeah, they got like, what do they call meters?
Oh, that, yeah, I heard about that. A friend of mine went and he's seen a football game in Canada, and they said he's on a 10-meter line.
They don't say meters in Canadian football.
Yeah, he did. He said they did.
Don't they do say meters.
No, they don't. Not in football. No, they don't. They say it like we say it. They say on the 20-yard line.
No, but they, yeah, but they got like the 50-kilogram line or something like that.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about my friend Snook who went up there.
I don't care if your friend Snook went up there. I'm telling you, I watch Canadian football on TV. They use yard lines.
They do?
Yes.
What I hear about them saying, they say they got a 55 kilometer or something like that?
55 yard line.
What's that about?
They got a 110-yard field, man. And don't ask me what that's about, okay? Because I think I know what it's about, but I'm not sure. It's about the fact that that's what the length of the field was. They say that the football that we have in North America started in Canada. And when it came down to the States, the stadiums were too small, so we shortened the field here to 100 yards.
That sounds like bull.
No, I believe it. I believe it. It's probably one of those stories that hasn't circulated because it's, you know, it relegates America to second spot in the overall history of football, and we couldn't have that now, could we?
Hey, man, why are you being so cynical? You always like support America and everything like that.
I support truth. In any event, I think, but I don't know. That's a 55-yard line. That's because the field's 110 yards.
What's half of 110?
What? Are you out of your... Are you guys are both staring at me.
Well, I'm sorry.
55!
Oh, yeah.
What's half of 110? The average weight gain associated with giving up smoking is much higher than previously thought, experts have found. People can expect to put on up to 5 kilograms within a year of quitting. 11 pounds, bud, okay?
Oh, okay.
Look, we got to take a break now, man. We got to take a break.
You can't keep going?
No. I want to start this all over fresh when we come out. I'm not going to... I'm not going to be rushing this. All right, when we come back, we'll come back to the how fat you get when you get up. You don't get that fat. Well, I did, but not you. When you give up smoking. And we got a story here. Florida A&M's president has resigned in the wake of, only at Florida A&M, a drum major hazing death. You know, that drum, that band they have at Florida A&M is big time. That's the Rattlers. And the drum major is the... probably the most famous of all drum majors. Well, they were hazing their drum majors, and one of them died. So we're going to find out about that when we come back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
He had on a big head on the fur hat, and he's going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Well, what's that mean?
Because he's always got his legs up in the air.
You talk about a drum major.
Yeah.
Yeah, drum majors are the guys with the big, tall fur hat, like you were saying. And they lead the band, man. And,
What's the purpose of them?
Well, they keep... the main purpose of a drum major is to keep the time, because that's why he's...
You're doing a hand motion.
Oh, will you grow up?
Yeah, that's right, man. That's what he's doing, holding a baton.
Yeah, maybe it's shaped like a baton.
Why don't you shut up before I smack you again? Drum majors keep time with the baton. And then they march, and they do that really exaggerated march. Originally, they did the exaggerated march so that the crowd, the audience, the whoever, could see the rhythm of the band, and the band could also see the drum major in front of them and the time that he was keeping for them. It's almost like a moving, he's not really a conductor. He's basically keeping the time. But as time went along, drum majors became very entertaining to watch because of their high kicking and the big hats that were originally intended to be seen by the band and were originally intended to show the basic, you know, time to be kept. They got to be really entertaining guys, you know?
Yeah, the one guy for USC.
Yeah, well, USC's had millions, just like every school. Florida A&M and some other college bands. Florida A&M has got the gold standard college marching band. I mean, they're a very, very flamboyant and entertaining band. And the drum majors, all of the drum majors for the Florida A&M bands are always fun to watch. But this story is anything but fun, okay? I don't want anybody to get the idea that we're, ooh, here's a story about drum majors. This is a story about a hazing of drum majors that caused the death of a student. And it just sucks, man. I was just reading about some story, I don't know how long ago. They wrapped some kid in tape, duct tape, from the nose, covered his arms. They had him immobile. And I was thinking about that. That is, I would go insane, man, if somebody had me. I've got a fear of that kind of thing.
Yeah, you were talking about like not being able to move and everything,
like being buried alive, like in pit in the pit in a or the pendulum or however you say it.
Buried alive and pit in the pendulum. Yeah, buried alive. That would scare the hell out of me. Did you ever see that movie, Vanishing Point?
No.
Oh, God. Man, that flick just... And I'm not talking about the American version, which always sucks. Always sucks. American movies are great. But the American version of European movies always suck. There's never, ever, ever, ever a time when they don't.
What about TV?
No comment.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, though, man.
Shut up. But pretty much the same opinion on television. We make some great movies in the States, and we make some great television shows here. When we take stuff that the Europeans have created and we decide to Americanize it, we always screw it up. We never make it better. Never. We tamp it down. We make it less edgy. We make it less funny. We make it less interesting. We can't resist screwing with something good and turning it into garbage. But that movie, Vanishing Point, oh, that thing was beautiful, man. If you saw the original... European version.
That was made like the Belgian, right?
Yeah, the Belgian monster, that was the one guy called it.
What do you mean, Belgian monster?
Everybody in Belgium is fat.
Yeah.
Everybody in Belgium is fat, huh?
Or what do you call it?
Belgium. What do you mean they're all fat?
Well, that's what everybody in England, they all say the Belgians is fat. And everybody says the Belgians is monsters because they're all fat.
Yeah, it's only on account of the donut.
Belgians eat a lot of donuts, huh?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Well, I'm not going to go there, okay? I mean, what are you guys talking about? You don't even know any Belgians, do you?
What, do you call Belgium?
What?
Who do you call?
Who do I call what?
No, do you call me Belgian?
I didn't call you a Belgian. What, are you flipping your lid? I said, what do you guys know about Belgians? And that's what they're called, Belgian.
What, that's a country?
No, the country's Belgium. You know, with you two guys... It's like I'm surprised I don't have to show you how to wipe yourselves and take a crap. Like we don't have to potty train you.
I ain't that stupid. Why do you think I'm that dumb?
I'm talking to you guys about Belgium, which is a country you guys should have studied in school.
What's it called, Belgium? Oh, I didn't know it's called Belgium. We're the Belgians.
Yeah, well, you think you're so smart.
Smarter than you guys. I don't even know why I'm arguing with you about it. And what are we talking about Belgiums for?
Yeah, you were talking about the guy with the big hat.
Yeah, the guy with the big hat. Anyway, Florida A&M University's James Ammons resigned as president of the school on Wednesday. I'm out of breath, man. Amid an ongoing scandal involving the school's famed marching band and the hazing death of one of its drum majors. This is horrible news. In a letter to the chairman of the Board of Trustees that was released by the university, Ammons announced he would step down as president on October the 11th. He said he will stay on as a tenured full professor dealing with science, technology, engineering, and math initiatives. I'm indebted to you and the Board of Trustees for allowing me to work in this capacity with you and the FAMU community, Florida A&M. The resignation came on the day that the parents of Robert Champion, who died in the hazing incident, filed their anticipated wrongful death suit against the university. The parents contended the school had failed to do all it could to supervise the Marching 100 Band, which had performed at Super Bowls and presidential inaugurations. The family had previously announced that it was going to sue FAMU, Florida's only public, historically black university. After waiting the required 6 months, Champions died November the 19th in Orlando after he was beaten during a hazing ritual by members of the marching band. You know, these institutions that have nothing to do with anything, in other words, we're not talking about the United States Armed Forces here. We're not talking about any government agency. We're not talking about doctors. We're talking about schools. And these schools, whether it's Penn State or it's Florida A&M or wherever, they get a reputation that is huge. It's national. It's glamorous. Let's face it, man. When you've got a big picture of one of your football players in Times Square, like University of Oregon did a few years ago.
Yeah, remember that guy when we went there?
Yeah, University of Oregon had this gigantic picture of an Oregon duck, you know, in that green, that dark green and yellow. And these guys, everything becomes big, man. It's more than a school now. It's like a school. It's part school, part movie, you know. It's part school, part nightclub or something. And suddenly you have young people who are not professionals. They're students. But they've been thrust into, we like to use this word thrust, they're thrust into this spotlight that is glamorous, exciting, that gets a lot of magazine covers, a lot of TV time, a lot of, you know, just a whole lot of publicity. And 9 times out of 10, something happens where all of that, you know, all of that potential commercial power goes to the heads of everybody involved. And I'm talking about not just so much the students, but the administration and the teachers, and it filters down to the students when they all of a sudden, man, you're in the Rattler band, you know, so you better just, you know, it's like,
yeah, if I beat on Penn State.
Yeah, it's like being on the Penn State football team. Hey, don't you know who we are? And suddenly there's this entitled thing that's going on. And the next thing you know, somebody's dead. And why is it? Because somebody said that the Florida A&M band is just all this, man. And it's linebacker you know. And aren't we something special? And I mean, I always laugh, man, because I've never been a college sport fan except for maybe the bowl games in football. And I long since gave up watching college basketball. I don't care, because to me, it's a joke. To me, it's like AAA baseball. It's minor league. It's not professional. It's not the best. When I go to watch a football game, I want to see the best. I don't want to go see who's going to be the national champion because they know how to run a wishbone, and that quarterback couldn't get hired as a water boy in the pros, you know. So check yourself, you know, like they say.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Don't forget tomorrow, episode 16 of the free Phil Hendry podcast debut. What we just did for the last 15 minutes. Didn't I say I wanted to do this?
Yeah.
What the hell did I get sidetracked on? All right, ex-smokers gain more than... You know what? This story is now boring.
Man, you didn't do a whole thing on it.
I know I was. I don't even know what we did the last 15 minutes. Oh, I know. It was the Florida A&M Rattlers. Nice going, Phil. I completely spaced on the... Well, the only point I wanted to make was this article that... is a British study, says that this is a bigger weight gain than previously thought. I gained, excuse me, man, but I'm yawning. And why am I yawning?
You're boring?
Yes, I'm boring. No, I'm yawning because I'm taking a lot of deep breaths for some reason.
Maybe it's all that weight.
Yeah, I think I'm too fat. Too fat. I'm down to 242, thank you very much. And by the way, I got into a shirt. You know, this goes along with the story. I picked up 40 pounds after I quit smoking in the spring of 2010. By the summer of 2010, I was 306 pounds. It was unbelievable. It was disgusting, but it was true. In March of this year, I decided that I would lose weight by the only way, or to paraphrase Malcolm X, by any means necessary. No, by the only way that...
What would that be?
Yeah, lose weight any means necessary.
I would just slash and burn all stores that sold cupcakes. No, I decided to lose weight in March of this year. The only way that I knew really how, the only way that I figured was going to work, and that was by limiting myself to 2,000 calories a day. I knew, after all of this horse dung, you know, you can go through all of these dances. You know, well, I don't do this, and I don't do that. Do I exercise? And what if I eat that? How about if I have ice cream once a week? No, 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 man. If you limit the amount of calories you're taking into your body, then you're limiting the fat that you're going to be putting on your ass. And pretty soon, you're going to be losing that fat off your ass. So I said it's going to be 2,000 calories or bust from here on out, and I even gave myself a little motto, 2,000 to 200, which I've upped it to 210 now.
Well, so that means you give yourself 2,100 calories.
No, it doesn't mean anything of the sort. But I have decided and this is in concert with my doctor. I'm yawning because I'm taking too many deep breaths of air, and I don't know why I'm taking too many deep breaths of air.
Maybe it smells good in here for the first time.
Yeah,
it
took the garbage out.
Could be. Maybe it's because, yeah, that's it. Bud, you took a bath. So anyway, what I did was 2,000 calories a day. And since March the 19th, I have averaged 13 pounds a month. That's my average, 13 pounds I've lost a month. So March 19th, April, May, June, 3.5 months. I started at 289. I was not at 300. I was at 289. I've lost 47 pounds.
Yay!
Well done, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. And I did it just with the 2,000 calories. And I'm still doing the 2,000 calories because next week when I weigh myself, I'll be below 240. I will be in the 230-something range. And then the week after that, it'll be another... probably another month, man. You know, it'll be. I'm giving it to the end of the end of summer, at least for my birthday, which is September the 1st. I think I can be at 210. It's going to be hard, but we'll see.
Yeah, if you're averaging 13 pounds a month.
Well, if I'm averaging 13 pounds a month, so between now and this time next month, I should be below 220 pounds or 230 pounds. I'd be in the 229, something like that. So then it's just 9 pounds between that and my target of 210. But I did it by limiting the calories. And the whole thing got rolling when I gave up smoking cigarettes. I've been smoking cigarettes since I was 14 years of age. And I gave them up when I was 57. So it's 43 years, man.
How many years is that?
What did you just say, man?
Oh,
I just said 43 years. Every day. And by the time I quit smoking, I was doing 3 packs a day. And anybody that watched the video cast back in those days, or before the days that I quit, you could see the cigarettes that I was smoking. And it was very ironic. Before I went into the hospital, it was Christmas week. And just before we went on vacation, I had done the Phil Hendry Christmas Carol, the very first Phil Hendry Christmas Carol. And it was really a success. We really did a good job. I thought it was funny, and we loaded it up and re-ran it a couple of times. And I was up pretty late doing that, and we did some pre-production on it, and it took a lot of energy. And I don't know. I maybe, you know, maybe I'm just fooling myself, but I think I ran myself down physically at that point, along with the cigarettes. That's when I got sick. But that's what got me to quit, man.
You went to the hospital, you had pneumonia.
Yeah, that's what got me to quit, so... But I had no idea, man, I was going to put 40 pounds on.
But what are you doing, man? I mean, you're done smoking, is you eating donuts and everything?
In other words, you're not even thinking about it. Okay, I'm giving up cigarettes, and so you're so proud of yourself that you're giving up cigarettes. You don't even, for a minute, think about anything else that you're doing wrong. You're like, I'm hungry again. Let's go and have another double cheeseburger, man.
Yeah, go down to In-N-Out, man. Four-bar animal.
I get a double-double myself.
All right, will you knock it off? I don't want to start getting hungry and wanting In-N-Out. God, I love that double-double animal style. Anyway,
I'm going to go get a 4x4.
I used to eat 4x4s. I'll tell you what a fat ass I was. I used to get into a competition with my son on who could eat the... We would go and eat, like, 4x4s for laughs.
What's a 4x4? Tell people what a 4x4 is. Nobody knows.
A 4x4... Thank you, bud. A 4x4 is 4 patties and 4 slices of cheese.
In one burger.
In one burger. At In-N-Out, and it's, oh, God, it's delicious. I mean, they got the best burgers going, man. And then animal style is fried onions on top of that. So we would have this, how many 4x4s can you eat? It was insane. Most of the excess weight was gained during the first 3 months, according to this study. It's based on 62 studies that found former smokers gained an average of 4.67 kilograms. I don't know what the hell that is. If 5 kilograms is 11 pounds, so 4.6 is about 11 pounds in 12 months after they quit. In the year after you quit, that's the kind of weight that you put on. Now, when I hit that 306 mark, that was in August, and that next fall, I'll never forget it, too. This is why exercise is not enough. I went out and power walked every day. That fall, every single day, I went out and humped it for a good 40 minutes a day. And I was doing, you know, I wasn't running, man, because for me to run at that weight, and I tried running at that weight, you get shin splints, your ankles go, your feet are killing you. I mean, it's insane. So I went out and I power walked at that weight, and I did it for September, October, November, December. I got on the scale in early January thinking, okay, I stayed away from the scale.
You didn't lose a pound, I bet.
Exactly. I hadn't lost 1 pound.
Man, I bet you want to commit suicide.
No, but it was bad. And I said to myself, you know, well, obviously this isn't work. You know, this is nuts. So then I spent the next year, 2011, just... dancing with this whole idea of calorie intake. Well, how do I do it? I'm not really sure. How many should I? Then I finally went and I had a full physical last summer, which is what you got to do, man. You know, and don't worry about it. You guys that are like my age or you're worried the doctor's going to find some raging brain tumor, you know, think about it, okay? You're probably about as mentally deficient as you're ever going to get. Now then.
Whatever.
Yeah, but so... For a solid year, I'm sitting there going, well, I'm okay, obviously exercise. Well, how do I don't know. And, you know, and then I had these apps. I was the Lose It app, and here's your calories for today. And I'm like, get out of here with that. I don't want to keep looking at the stupid app. So for a whole year, I'm messing around until finally March of this year, I just went, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And I would have probably then committed suicide if I hadn't lost any weight. But in the first week, man, I got on the scale, I looked, boom, yeah, finally, man, I was down to like, I dropped 5 pounds that week. And
that made you not want to shoot yourself.
That made me have faith that what I was doing was going to work. And so according to the doctor here, weight gain is important because weight concern is widespread among smokers and could deter some from trying to quit. In an accompanying editorial, Professor Esteve Fernandez, the University of Barcelona, and Professor Simon Chapman of the University of Sydney point out that past studies have also shown that many smokers gain more weight than never smokers for a few years, but then the rate of weight gain falls to that seen in people who have never smoked. And they concluded the following. Although obesity is positively associated with an increased risk of all causes of mortality, cohort studies indicate that modest weight gain does not increase the risk of death. Smoking does. Well, we'll just see.
Oh, are you saying they're lying, man, to get people to quit smoking?
Well,
what are you saying? That's potentially groundbreaking, Mr. Henry, the opinion what you're having.
Oh, take it easy. I just think that there's a real push on to get people to quit smoking. I get it. I don't think they'd be responsible if they said, oh, no, don't worry about it, and the weight gain was actually serious. But how can you say the weight gain is not something that's bad, you know, or not a health issue? But I will tell you this. Give up the cigarettes, man. Give them up, and then give up the weight. If you're not ready to give up smoking, don't worry about it. If you're not ready to give it up, then you're not ready to give it up. I'm not telling you to quit, you know. But if you're sick of it, man, I mean, if you're just, like, sick of it, you know, you just do it. And for me, I you know, getting pneumonia was a blessing because all I got to do is think of myself laying there with an oxygen mask in my face, and I don't ever want to go back there. And that's what keeps me from picking those weeds up, you know. So
but maybe out of people get a pneumonia or something.
Yeah, if they get pneumonia, they probably...
What do you mean pneumonia and ammonia? Pneumonia. What do you mean ammonia?
Yeah, everybody knows ammonia is what you, like, your underwear smells like if you don't take a bath.
Will you shut up about that?
What's it called?
Pneumonia.
Why's it got to pee?
You got to pee.
Would you guys shut up? Are you guys asking me to explain the intricacies of the English language? Because I'm not going to do it. Why it has a P, I'm not going to explain this to you. I got to explain stuff to you guys that I never thought I had to explain to any kid, let alone adults. I got to tell you guys why. What was that question you asked me last week, bud?
About what?
About a choo-choo, a steam whistle.
Well?
He's asking me, how come steam whistles sound like that?
Yeah, ha, 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 ha. So, you ask dumb questions, too, like the one you're asking about how a bicycle works.
Yeah, how does a bicycle work?
Yeah, Robert wanted to know how a bicycle stays up on two wheels.
Ha, ha.
Do you know, bud?
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, not gravity, but anti-gravity, I think.
Anti-gravity? Ain't no such thing, man.
Yeah, well, I guess not, but Star Trek said that there...
Well, you forget about anti-gravity... You're balancing it. The person that is riding the bike keeps the two wheels aligned and keeps it balanced.
Why don't you just have four wheels?
Because it's easier with two wheels. It's easier to build. It's lighter. It's more mobile. You can pick it up. You can put it on a car. You can do a lot of things with a two-wheeled vehicle that you can't do with a four-wheel. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. God, that was tiring explaining that stuff to you guys. We'll be right back. And don't forget, we're online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. Hit the podcast banner and get tomorrow's podcast. It'll be up sometime tomorrow. Just subscribe, so it'll just be loaded into the old iPod, episode 16. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What if we weren't right back? What if you lied? Well, then I would have lied. All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night here from the El Pacifico, the beautiful Pacific Ocean. As if you're watching on Phil TV and HD, you can see behind me the roiling surf and the weather today out here, just in case you're interested, you know, the out here at the Pacific edge. We live in a very unusual area of the California coast, and that is because we're out here along the Ventura, it's kind of the L.A. County-Ventura line, where it does tend to get... The water tends to run a little colder, and we do get probably more than our fair share of low clouds on New Year's Day, in fact. Now, last year, New Year's Day was awesome, and we had clear skies, and we had really cool fireworks. Actually, we had pretty cool fireworks this year.
Yeah, there was one fireworks was bitching.
But, I mean, we did have some clouds and stuff on the 4th, but today was really sweet. And there was one summer we had here that just sucked. I mean, I could have blown my brains out, man. Every day of the summer, it was overcast. If you got in a car and you drove a mile inland, man, bang, there's sunshine. Because the stupid fog and low clouds were hugging the coast. But I remember thinking, what's the point of living at the beach, man, if all you got is this stuff? But so far, the last two summers have been really nice. So I'm hopeful that it remains the same way. All right, what do we want to look at here as we conclude the show's activities? Just going through our news. San Bernardino files for who cares, man, about... I mean, I do care about you guys filing for bankruptcy, San Bernardino, but not that much. Bin Laden's cook has been freed. That's a bummer. I don't want to read about that.
What about his cook?
Bin Laden's cook was freed after 10 years in Guantanamo. Why'd they have his cook in there? I guess it's because he was enabling Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, he was feeding them.
Yeah, that's a war crime.
If ever I heard of one. A man who spent a decade as a prisoner in the U.S. detention facility for militants in Guantanamo Bay returned Wednesday to his native Sudan after completing a shortened sentence for aiding Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Ibrahim Al-Qasi was getting reacquainted with his wife and two daughters and other family members and will spend some time in a government-sponsored reintegration program in the capital of Khartoum before returning to his hometown, said his lawyer, Paul Riker. Al-Qasi, who recently turned 52, had not seen his family since he was captured and sent to the U.S. base in Cuba in early 2002. His release brings the prison population down to 168. Reichler is the attorney's name. I guess you call this probably the best birthday present he ever received. The Pentagon and state-run media in Sudan confirmed Al-Qasi's release. Al-Qasi admitted serving food and providing other services at a militant camp. He was among the first prisoners taken to Guantanamo, the hastily arranged detention center to hold men suspected of ties to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. From a high of nearly 700, the population is now down to less than 170. President Barack Obama vowed to close the prison, but has been prevented from doing so by Congress. Al-Qasi, who moved to Afghanistan in 1996 to work with Islamic militants, struck a deal with U.S. military prosecutors in July of 2010, pleading guilty to providing material support to terrorism and conspiracy in exchange for a 14-year sentence that would be shortened to 2 years from his conviction. It spared him the possibility of a longer sentence. He was never accused of any specific acts of violence. His work as a cook helping gather supplies for the militant... he worked as a cook, rather, and helped gather supplies for the militant camp. His lawyer said he may have accompanied Osama bin Laden as part of an entourage, but was never a member of the terrorist leader's inner circle. Bin Laden, founder of the Al-Qaeda unit, was killed by the U.S.
Man, it didn't sound like the guy did nothing.
Yeah, but he's in Al-Qaeda, man. Doesn't matter if you ain't doing nothing. Even if you in a cooking for the army, you're still in the army.
Yeah, but if all you're doing is cooking.
Yeah, but if they catch you, like Al-Qaeda catch you, or I don't know, the Nazis or something, and you're a cook, they still going to make you prisoner of war.
It's true, bud. You know.
Yeah, but these guys aren't no army. It's a terrorism.
Oh, get out of here. See, that's the thing. These guys sneak under the radar with that whole, oh, well, it's a terrorist unit. Well, guess what, man? These cats, whether they're a terrorist cell or whether they are a terrorist auxiliary police or whether they're the PLO or whatever the hell, this is a militarized group of individuals who have a very definite plan of attack against this country. It's an enemy organization of this country, and I just don't buy this bull crap, man. These people with this whole civil trial. Let me tell you something, man. I don't know if this is another thing that people don't know. If you want to read history, and I talked to this one guy who, you know, I get a real lesson every now and again in how people argue things. This guy's on the phone with me, and he's saying, Nuremberg was not a military tribunal. No, it was. I said, yes, it was. No, it wasn't. I said, yes, it was. No, it was. If I hadn't studied Nuremberg and knew exactly what I was talking about, that guy, with anybody else, probably would have bullied them into thinking, oh, geez, civilian trial. Nuremberg was a military tribunal, and they put civilians on trial as well as members of the German military as well as all this other stuff. But it is a military tribunal. Every single tribunal back then was military, and subsequent to that. And we've had military tribunals in Cuba. So, you know, just because you say something creative to get the far-left progressives in your party to vote for you, which is, I believe, what President Obama did. He tried to come up with some real creative stuff. I know, we'll shut down Guantanamo Bay, and here's another thing, we'll have civilian trials, and that gets, like a lot of progressives who really don't know why they believe what they believe, but they just think that sounds cool. So Obama promised that to them and a whole bunch of other crap. They voted for him. He gets in to be president, and he does what any president does. He goes, thanks a lot. Nice, thanks for your votes, but we're just going to, you know, put you to the rear of the line, man. That's the way the ball game's played!
Yeah, but they thought he's a real prog.
Well, he wasn't a real prog. Anybody that thinks Obama's a real prog, and I got news for you. Healthcare It may sound really extremely liberal to your rank and file conservative. I got news, it ain't all that liberal, man. It's over a 100-year-old idea, for God's sake. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, bye.
Phil.
You were
Hendry.
Late. I know.